It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Convenient, light, versatile. What would we do without plastic? However, the world's over-reliance on plastic is creating serious problems with potentially devastating consequences, particularly for our oceans. The Ellen MacArthur Foundation estimates that by 2050, the amount of plastic in the ocean will outweigh the amount of fish in the ocean. With pioneering TV programs such as Blue Planet 2 highlighting the toxic impact of the plastic economy, people are being urged to change their plastic use behaviour. Former Chelmsford rugby club player Dawn Wood is passionate about the war on plastic and has decided to embark on the most astronomical of challenges to draw attention to it. She is going to row single-handedly across the Atlantic Ocean. As a skipper with the Essex Police Marine Unit, Dawn is no stranger to life on the water. That even with her vast experience in her job, as well as her time in the Burnham on Crouch Rowing Club, this task represents a whole new challenge. In the ocean, Dawn could potentially face swirling winds, sharks, and wholly unpredictable waters as she bids to cross the Atlantic in a world record time. But if she completes the crossing after she sets off in January, she will be just one of six women to have succeeded. Brought to you by Essex Live, this is Humans of Chelmsford, and this is Dawn Wood's story. Dawn, it is a very warm welcome to the podcast, and thank you for being our latest guest on this episode. How are you on this Wednesday afternoon?
Thank you very much for having me. Yes, I'm very well, thank you.
That's always good. And I suppose there's really only one place to start, and that is the incredible, mad challenge you've set yourself for the start of next year in 2019. And as I've mentioned in the intro to this episode, you have decided to row across the Atlantic Ocean from Gran Canaria to Barbados. And for those that don't know, that is a trip of roughly 3,000 miles. It's a mad task. You're doing it solo and unsupported. So the question that instantly jumps to mind for me and for everyone is why? Why do it to yourself?
That is a very good question. Well, I actually started rowing back in 2014, and I'm now the chairman of our local rowing club. So that's how I first got into rowing. Through that, the president of our rowing club, he's a world record holder for ocean rowing. He's rowed the Atlantic a couple of times. Just a little trip. So got speaking to him, and he was running a project teaching ocean rowing out in China, which he asked me to get involved in because I'm an instructor in power boating and certain navigational things as well. So I ended up going out to China, teaching students out there. Absolutely loved it, and the more I was learning about it, by the end of the project, the end of the 3 years, I ended up coxing the rowing boats and actually being in charge of the rowing boats and taking the students out in the China Seas. And it's actually resulted in four of the girls the beginning of this year in a team called Kung Fu Cha Cha. They were the first Chinese team. I think they were the youngest female team as well to row across the Atlantic. That, what an incredible thing for these girls to do. Before the start of the project, they'd never even been on a boat. So just amazing. From that, I got inspired to do something myself. Well, actually, since the start of the project, I wanted to row an ocean. But the more I was getting into it, the more I realised this has to happen. Then I got friendly with a lady called Kiko Matthews, who's the current world record holder for the route that I'm going to be rowing. And she's just an inspirational woman. She is incredible. I got friendly with her while she was coming over to Burnham on Crouch to do her training for her row. And then I got speaking to her after she came back. So she broke the world record. She currently has it set 49 days. And through speaking to her, I just realised, why am I sitting back and waiting for something to happen? What is it that I'm waiting for exactly? And I realised that if I want this to happen, I need to go ahead and do it. I've been a commercial skipper. I've been working on the water commercially for 16 years. And throughout that time, the amount of rubbish and pollution that I've seen out on the water, plastics washing up on the seawall. So the two things sort of have intertwined themselves naturally. So some of my aims for rowing across the Atlantic, one, I want to beat the world record. Sorry, Kiko, I love you. I want to beat the world record. I want to raise awareness for plastics in the ocean and try and encourage other people to reduce their single-use plastics. And I want to inspire people as well. If I can inspire somebody even to do a race for life or a fun run that they walk, it's just something out of their comfort zone, getting people to achieve something. So if I can inspire people to achieve something or try something they've never done before, that'll be a really good result for my incredible expedition as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And to put that expedition into some sort of perspective for people, you would be one of only six women in the world to have completed it, Kiko Matthews being one of the other six.
Yeah.
More people have been to space
than
done it. More people have climbed Mount Everest
than
have done it. So what is it about a challenge like this that makes it so, A, difficult and B, dangerous?
Well, so first of all, what makes it so difficult is it's not just a case of training, getting fit and going to do it. You have to learn all about the navigation. You have to learn all about the boat, the ins and outs of it. You really have to be an engineer. So if my water maker breaks, I need to know how to fix it. If some of the electrics goes down, I need to know how to fix it. So it's not just a fitness thing. It's a survival mission. It's learning how to be an engineer. There's so many different aspects involved in it. That you need to learn. Now, luckily from my position, being a commercial skipper, I've got a lot of those skills and knowledge anyway. So it's just building on what I already know to be able to do it. What makes it dangerous? Well, sharks, that comes springs to mind, first of all. I don't know why, but it didn't actually occur to me until I'd stamped on the line and said, yes, I'm going to do it. Then I suddenly thought, there's going to be sharks. And because the bottom of the boat will get furred up, so you have to get in and clean the bottom of the boat. You obviously stay attached to it. So sharks is one. Dehydration, so that's a big risk. If I get dehydrated, then that starts making you feel even more sick. If you're seasick, that makes you dehydrated. So there's lots of illness risks there with it. If you get an injury at sea, that's going to take a lot longer to heal. So I've got quite a comprehensive medical kit on board with antibiotics and all kinds of things. I'm going to learn to sew myself up if I cut myself. There's obviously then the dangers and risks from the weather. So if you've got bad weather and big waves, potential for capsizing the boat. Capsizing is obviously quite dangerous because you could hurt yourself, fall out the boat. But the other risk is you're going to lose equipment overboard, so everything needs to be tied down. You really need to be on top of the housekeeping. If things are loose all around the place, then you'll just lose stuff.
I think what people maybe don't realise when you take on a task like that is not only do you have to be a rower, and a good one at that, you have to be part doctor. If you've got to sew yourself up, you have to be a housekeeper of extraordinarily organisational skills.
Yeah.
And then you also need to have engineering experience as well.
Absolutely.
If anything breaks, and then that leaves you in a very precarious position.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely right. There's everything from top to bottom of that boat I need to know inside and out. So, it's not just a case of just rowing. Rowing's obviously a very, very big part of it, funny enough. But the top to bottom, inside and out, you need to know everything about that boat. Mm-hmm. Obviously got loads of spare parts on board as well, toolkit. If it doesn't move and it's supposed to, hit it with a hammer. If it moves and it's not supposed to, stick it down with duct tape. It will be a bit more comprehensive than that, but you need to be able to make sure everything on board is you know how it works and how to fix it.
You alluded to it before, is trying to break the world record as well.
Yes.
During this exhibition, which currently stands at 49 days, I believe I'm right in saying.
Yeah.
Does that serve as extra motivation for you, so that if the going does get tough, you still have that time span in your mind to keep pushing you through?
Yes, absolutely right. Yeah, I like to have goals. So obviously this just completing it is a massive goal in itself. If I've got that time scale in mind and I'm starting to fall a bit behind a bit or starting to wane in enthusiasm, or because I'm sure rowing for 15 hours can get a bit monotonous
when you're doing it day after day.
That's
after
right
day.
Yeah. So it's good to have that little bit of extra motivation to go, oh, I'm only doing 2.5 knots. If I row a bit faster or for a couple of hours longer today, I might get that extra bit of speed and get a little bit further. So yeah, it's all part of the adding to it reaching that goal.
So in terms of then the motivation, and I think a lot of people would be interested to know how your training regime goes leading up to a challenge like this.
Yeah.
And again, there must be times when you think, my God, what, I can't go any further, but something has to push you to keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. So before I collected my boat at the end of May, and leading up to then, I was doing a lot of time in the gym, making sure the correct muscles were worked out and starting to strengthen up. But since getting my boat, I literally spend every hour I possibly can rowing, because not only does that build up the right muscles and get you to, you realise then where the aches and pains are, and I need a really big, massive seat cushion, I think. it gets to where the aches and pains are and what you need to work on more. I forgot what I was going to say.
Oh, we've all been there as well. Training regime.
Oh, that's right. That's where we were. I'd gone off at a tangent. Yeah. So it's not just about fitness training. It's about training your mind as well. So, for example, I did a 5-hour row. Well, it's probably more like 8 hours in the end. And it was a lovely row to start with. I was with the tide. I was with the wind. I anchored up for lunch. I thought, this is beautiful. And then the tide had turned, so I picked anchor to row home. So I was with the tide, but now the wind was against me. And it took me 3 hours to row a stretch that took me about 25 minutes going the other direction. And you're so right. You think, I'm rowing for all my might and I'm getting about half a knot of speed, and it does start to grind you down. But I just started to think to myself, well, if I stop rowing, then I'm going to be going backwards. So that's even worse. But yeah, it's about training your mind to think, well, what's going to give me the best outcome? What do I need to do to make this a better outcome? And just work towards that. So I got home in the end.
That was your motivation.
That
to get
was
home.
My motivation to get home. Yeah.
Are then the mental side of things and the mental challenges arguably harder than the physical challenges?
I think possibly at some points they can. I mean, there's obviously going to be times where the weather's nice and everything, the conditions are great. It's just a case of you just need to be fit to carry on going. But yeah, there's going to be other times where you think, I just want to get in the cabin and go to sleep. But if you do that, you'll end up going off course, or you'll be going backwards, or yeah, so there's going to be lots of times where mentally you need to be fitter than physically.
Mm-hmm. Would you say you're a mentally strong person? And have there been instances in your past where, you know, you've had to face tough times?
Yeah.
And how have you batted those aside when they've come up?
I think I'm quite mentally strong, yeah. I've had to deal, through my line of work, I've had to deal with some pretty grueling situations, some quite tough times, and I'm quite good at ordering things, I think. So I work out what's important, what isn't important. Training kicks in a lot of the time as well. So again, when I'm out of work, we've dealt with a lot of emergency situations and your training just kicks in. So you do what needs to be done rather than sometimes what your head's telling you that you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably sets me in good stead for crossing the Atlantic as well. There's, when you're in bad weather and the boat's turning upside down, there's probably times where I'm going to think, I just want to tie myself down and pretend it's not happening. But my training will kick in and go, well, no, I need to contact this person, or I need to ensure that the boat's set up correctly. And you just keep going.
Yeah. Since you've touched on it there, we'll move on to that and your role in Essex Police and in the maritime section of the police.
Yeah.
Are there a lot of transferable skills there?
Absolutely,
from your job,
yeah,
to what you can apply,
yeah,
here?
So I joined the maritime police 16 years ago. And through doing that, I'm now one of the launch skippers. I'm a yacht master, commercial endorsed yacht master, and a yacht master instructor as well. So one of the things people need to learn for doing an ocean row is how to navigate. Well, I'm already an instructor in that, so that's set me in really good stead. I know how to deal with emergency situations. We've been out to other people's maydays. We've assisted people at sea. Obviously, the RNLI, your first port of call, but if we're out, then we'll assist as well. We've been in some pretty rough weather conditions where you want to panic, but you can't panic, and your training kicks in. You make sure that all the equipment is strapped down, or whatever it is that needs doing. So I think that is going to put me... It's given me quite a lot of confidence, and it's given my friends and family confidence in what I'm doing, because they know I know enough about it to not throw myself into it if I didn't think I was capable of doing it.
Yeah, it strikes me as a job and a role which is very unpredictable, but also quite exciting as well,
yeah,
depending on what you get to do.
You never know what's going to happen. So we could come on duty one day and there's no tasking, so we're just going out on a routine patrol. Then an hour later, there's a mayday, there's a medical situation, or there could be any number of things. We've got a 400 mile of coastline that we cover, and we deal with anything at sea that you'd expect land police to deal with. But on top of that, we're also enforcing bylaws and assisting with mates. So you just never know what you're going to end up doing from one day to the next.
Exactly. But I suppose that unpredictability and being prepared for that unpredictability,
yes,
as well will help you,
yes,
when something you don't expect to come,
yes,
arrives when you're doing the challenge itself.
Yeah, being able to deal with change and being flexible, definitely key skills to be able to have to row an ocean.
Yeah. In terms of the boat then that you're using to tackle the Atlantic, just describe to the listeners exactly what it's like, because we've all, I suppose, we've seen it in pictures and things like that, but in terms of what's inside and,
yeah,
what you have that you can use to your disposal.
It's small. So the boat itself is
cozy, I think.
Cozy, yeah. It's 21 foot long, which when you're stood next to it, it looks quite big, but when you consider it in the middle of an ocean, It's actually quite small, but it's small but perfectly formed, I'd like to say. It's got all the equipment I need. So on board, in the cabin, I've got a VHF radio, Which is connected to a chart plotter, which in turn has got a tracking system. So not only am I sending out a signal to ships that could be in the Atlantic, it's also I'm picking up their signal as well. So that's a collision avoidance mechanism, so I can see where other ships are. There's also on board I'm going to have a satellite phone and GPS tracker. So people tuning in, they'll be able to follow me on my website, see whereabouts I am and if I'm on track for the world record or not. There's also solar panels which charge two 12-volt batteries, which in turn power all my electrics. So there's a fair amount of technical equipment going on. Also my water maker. So I will be carrying a certain amount of fresh water just in case of emergencies, but day to day I'll be drinking water that's been sucked up from the sea, been desalinated, and then I'll drink it or wash with it. Or
obviously we're a few months away now from the actual start of the task, but have you considered just what it would be like to live on that boat, which is a very confined space, and it could begin to feel claustrophobic?
I actually love being on the boat. It's great. Mm-hmm. If I've had a stressful day at work or wherever, I'll get onto the boat, and sometimes I'll just sit there for an hour and make sure my gadgets are in the right place and think where I'm going to put different things. It's strangely for me quite a relaxing environment to be in. That may probably will change about 1,000 miles into it, but I quite like being in that kind of situation.
Mm-hmm. And obviously the main point of all of this, other than I suppose proving to yourself that you can do this, is obviously the fundraising aspect.
Yes.
And you're looking to raise £100,000 to fund the campaign to make an impact on ocean plastic pollution.
Yes.
And obviously many of us will have seen Blue Planet, the documentary, as well as things like Sky News' ocean rescue campaign that they're running now. Just how grave is that issue of plastics in the ocean right now?
It's quite a big passion of mine, and now I've got a platform to be able to send this message out. It's becoming even more of an impactive thing that I feel I need to tell people about. The Ellen MacArthur Trust released the fact that if we don't stop what we're doing by 2050, there'll be more weight of plastics in the ocean than fish. I mean, that's quite an incredible... It's not that far away. And what an incredible fact. It's frightening. And obviously any rubbish being in the ocean is not good. We shouldn't be putting anything in there that's not supposed to be there. But plastics is a particular problem because it attracts toxins. The plastic breaks down into microplastics. That attracts toxins. Fish and other sea life will then eat that, and it's then getting into our food chain. Other animals are eating, so whales will eat seabirds and fish. It doesn't matter where you live or where on the planet you are affected by this problem. If you live in the middle of London, you are still affected by the problem of plastics in our ocean. So it's a worldwide issue that we need to deal with straight away.
I presume the message you're trying to send as well is to change people's behaviour, because it is so ingrained in society, really. If you just pop to the supermarket and see how much plastic is wrapped around an item of fruit, for example. It's a really big task to face, arguably bigger than the rowing challenge you set yourself. But is that something that you feel so passionately about, it will drive you through even beyond once this challenge is done?
Yes. What I'd like to do is, after I've done the row, is then use the boat so I can then take it round to other schools. I'm doing schools talks at the moment, but I think to be able to take a boat to say this has crossed the Atlantic, hopefully, fingers crossed, this is a boat that's broken a world record, then it gives a bit of a focal point for people to come and see me, and then I can send this message out about single-use plastic. We've just become a throwaway nation. You use a plastic straw. I think there's some fact like most single-use plastics are used for 90 seconds and then it goes into the trash. So you've used the straw, it goes in the bin, you've used the carrier bag to get it from the supermarket to the car, and it's in the bin. And as you said, fruit. Why are we wrapping fruit in plastic? It's got its own, it's got its own wrapper on it that nature gave it. Why are we wrapping it in plastic? It's something as the public that I think certainly becoming, we're becoming more aware of. So if I was to choose an item in the shop, I'd choose the one not wrapped in plastic. But I think there needs to be more done further up, because if those options are not available for us to buy, then you haven't got a choice. So I think there does need to be more done. And hopefully, by raising my profile through doing this row, maybe I can become a bit more influential and start looking at impacting it at a different level.
Exactly. And you will be picking up pieces of plastic that you find along the way. But of course, it's not just exclusive to that, because you've been doing bits and pieces like that in your police role as well. And that, are those images then, because you were showing me pictures before we even started recording about what you'd found off of Southend Beach, for example. And it's arguably the images that are the most striking of all.
Yeah. It's, well, we collected, I think it was about 20 pieces of plastic in the space of about 2 hours off of Southend the other weekend. And it was all lilos, beach balls, stuff that I'm quite sure people have not deliberately taken to the beach to throw into the sea. But it's about being mindful about how we treat our beaches, how we interact with nature. I do believe that most people are not just mindless trash throwing plastic in the sea, but it's about mindfulness and about thinking about how we are consumers and how we treat our environment.
Exactly, yeah. Another interesting fact, I suppose, if you like, is that you are a former Chelmsford Rugby Club player, hence why you're on this podcast, after all. Being involved in a sport like rugby, firstly, what has that taught you? But also, there's the teamwork aspect that probably will be alien to you now, that you're setting about this task on your own, fully independently.
So I've been involved in different sports. I've played hockey. Rugby was one of, or still is one of my passions. I just don't play anymore. Getting a bit old for that. They'll probably bring me out of retirement after this. And the club rowing that I do, that's the four people rowing in the boat. So every sport I've been involved in has pretty much been a team event. So I'm really used to working as a team, interacting with other people, working out how the team dynamics work. So to go from that to now doing something complete, I won't have a safety boat. I'm not going to have anybody on board with me. There's people who are going, well, there must be a camera crew to film it all. No, there isn't anybody. It's just me. If I call for help, I'm looking for about probably 3 days before a passing ship will come along. So to go from teamwork to doing something independent is quite a change of tack for me, but it's something that I'm taking on board as another part of the challenge. It's something else to strive towards, to achieve, and I know I can make it work because I've been doing it in my training. So it's just taking that one step further.
Yeah, and it must be a little bit refreshing in that you don't effectively have to rely on anyone else. The only hurdle is you, essentially.
Yeah, that's right. So for the last 3 years since I got involved in ocean rowing, I've had the dream that I will row an ocean. But I've always thought about who will I do it with, would the team be? And after speaking to Kiko, and she obviously did it solo, I started to realise actually I can do this on my own. She inspired me to be able to do that. So it's definitely going to be a change of what I'm doing, but yeah.
Absolutely. So whenever people do attempt something on the scale, we talked about the solo aspect, but there is always a support network of other people in the background helping you out.
Yes.
So who are the influences for you in this? Who's there to really push you when you need a little bit of support?
So my husband's really supportive, Jamie. People said, oh, what does he think about it? But I think he knows the skills that I've got. So he's not worried in any way. He knows that I'm capable of doing it. And he probably kind of thought, if I say no, she'll go and do it anyway. So he might as well get a holiday out in Barbados out of it. All my friends have been absolutely incredible. They're helping me to get raffle prizes for fundraising events and setting up fundraising events as well, helping me organise things that I'm doing. My family, my mum, if you bump into my mum, she will tell you all about it, even if you don't want to hear about it. Anyone that will listen. And my dad's emailing people and trying to get raise more awareness. So my mum and dad are like my main. They're out there telling the world.
They're the groupies.
Yeah, there's posters going up everywhere. And I've also had a few people that I didn't know that well have come forward and said, I'd really like to get involved in this. They're really passionate about plastics in the ocean. Didn't really know what they could do personally to help, other than the obvious, like, don't buy, use plastic bags and don't use plastic straws. And they've seen my challenge and gone, wow, this is something I can help with and make a difference in. So there's people I've inspired in that way just to come and help me organise this campaign and hopefully raise some awareness and make a bit of a difference.
That must be rewarding in itself as well.
Yeah.
Seeing, even before it's even happened,
yes.
Seeing the impact that it's having on people.
Yeah.
And does that serve, again, we're going back to motivation again, but
yeah.
Having those people knowing that they're cheering you on back
yes.
home, again, to keep you pushing
yeah.
when the going gets tough.
And I think most people can rely on their friends and family to help cheer them along anyway, no matter what they're doing. But to have some like a lady called Anita, she got in touch with me. I'd met her before. We knew of each other. But she said, what you're doing is amazing. And she contacted me at just the right time, because I was getting to the stage where I thought, I've run out of contact. I still need a couple more sponsors. I'm running out of contacts. There's only so many times you can speak to people in your own community before they get bored of you asking for money or selling them bamboo toothbrushes or whatever it is. So she brought a real new lease of life to the campaign, and kind of made me feel there's other people that want to get on board with this. It's not just me saying this is what I'm going to do. There's other people wanting to get involved. So yeah, it gave me a real boost of morale to get a contact like that. It was just great. Yeah
absolutely. Now we'll finish off, because there is a GoFundMe page.
Yes.
And we'll put the link in the show notes for any listeners who might want to contribute to what you're doing.
Thank you.
So where else can people go to support you, but also to follow your journey when it gets underway?
So my campaign is called Row Aurora. And Aurora, I chose that because my name's Dawn, and Aurora is Latin for dawn, which
there
I only
go.
Found out. I was trying to think of a campaign name, so that would match perfectly. So if you put in Google Dawnwood Row Aurora or Dawnwood Ocean Rowing, most of my links should come up. But I've got a Facebook page, facebook.com/Row Aurora. I've got a website, which is www.rowaurora.co.uk. Twitter is the other way round, strangely, so it's Aurora/Row. So if you type my name in, Ocean Rowing or Row Aurora, most of my links should come up that way as well.
Perfect. So if any listeners want to follow your journey, because it's going to be one hell of a journey, that's where they can go, and you'll be posting updates and
yes,
things like that.
Yeah.
So people can
even
follow.
Mid-Atlantic, I'm going to be able to send emails and some real basic photographs back. So I'm going to have somebody keeping my... all my social media up to date, so even when I'm Atlantic, you'll be able to follow my journey.
Perfect.
And with that, me crying and smiling.
Smile all the way through. And with that, we better finish up this episode of the podcast, and thank you once again for taking
some
time out.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, and sharing your mind-boggling, incredible
mind-boggling, that's
challenge.
A good description, yeah.
So, we obviously look forward to seeing what happens, and you'll have to check back in with us.
Brilliant.
Once you've
absolutely.
Actually... cross the Atlantic
yes.
and see if that world record has been broken at the end of it.
Fantastic.
So,
thank you
so
much.
Dawn.
Thank you.
Follow Essex Live on Facebook, Twitter, and on Instagram, or go to our website, essexlive.news.